Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Get It Off Your Breast, the podcast that digs into all those issues that are really getting under your skin. My name's Leanna Bird.
And I'm Emma.
And this is our 7th episode, and we're really, really excited about this guest.
This guest is someone that we have admired from afar. She's been in a bit of a media storm recently. It's been a total whirlwind for this guest, and we're so excited to get her on to talk about the issues really getting under her skin.
It is model and activist Monroe Bergdorf joining us this week.
So welcome back to Get It Off Your Breast. This is a very exciting episode that we've been waiting for. So we're with Monroe Bergdorf.
Hi.
The Monroe, who we've all been stalking online for God knows how long. So we're finally in person with you.
Oh, thank you.
So as you know, listeners and Monroe, we talk about things we want to get off our breasts. So we wanted to let you go first. What's your topic? And yeah, what are you going to talk about?
I think my topic is putting people into boxes or being surprised when people break out of that box. So one of the examples that I wanted to use was in people becoming aware of me and the work that I'm doing, a lot of people who don't necessarily run in the same circles as anyone that happens to identify as trans, people like that messaging me and saying, I never thought that I would agree with a trans person, or you're a transgender G, or you're, I never thought that like a trans person could be so down to earth, or like that kind of thing. And I think it goes back to how we police the actions and the identities of women, I think. And I think it's something that all women experience, you know, the fact that, I don't know, like I was talking to my managers, they're saying that like I want to be able to go into the news 1 minute and then I want to be rolling around in a fashion campaign on the floor in a sexy dress the next. So, you know, I want to be a whole person. But I think that this is where intersections also come into play and why we need intersectional feminism, because there's also this common misconception that being trans is a big deal, and really we're just like anybody else, so why wouldn't you agree with me? It doesn't really make any sense.
So do you find that people actually are surprised that you're not always talking about trans issues, and do you think that kind of goes against what they're expecting and what the idea that they have?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the media's obsession at the moment, isn't it? And it's kind of moved from trans women to trans kids, and I assume that trans men will be next. But yeah, there's this assumption that you should always be talking about it, because I don't think people can wrap their head around it, because it's not what they identify as. But I think it's the same with like people that identify as gender fluid, because they can't wrap their head around it. And because I am trans, and because I'm black, and because I'm female, I understand all of those social hindrances, I'm air quoting right now, hindrance, like things that may hold you back in society. So I understand that, but I'm not genderqueer or gender fluid. So me understanding that, I'm wrapping my head around that, sorry, but wrapping my head around that in some way helps me understand other people. But at the same time, empathy, like we live in such an unempathetic society.
Is it a weird backhanded compliment? Because that does not sound like a compliment, that someone's saying, I didn't think I would agree with a trans person.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're saying that you've done something, you've spread a message that has somehow got through these barriers that were once there.
Yeah.
It's like saying, someone like Piers Morgan.
It's like someone like, you know, saying, oh, you know what, Joe, you're pretty cool for a gay guy. It's like stuff like that. It's ridiculous. Like, it's like placing them ahead of you, like saying, I'm at the top, but I'm co-signing you as one of us. Like, you're allowed to sit at the table. it's like, oh, she's one of the guys. Mm. Like, do you know what I mean?
You're funny for a woman.
I've had
female friends who are comedians have that say to them, oh, you're really funny for a woman. And it's like, no, you're just really funny.
And it's like, yeah, girls can't be funny. Mm. If you're pretty, then you can't be a funny girl. Mm. If you're, you know, if you're fat or if you're a bigger person, then you can't be healthy. You, like, all of these things, it's like we're expected to be one or the other. And when we're not, it confuses people. Like, you can be a sexually active woman and have a brain. Like, you can who be into knew? Tech
and lots of nodding going on in that room when I said that. Heads up. Yeah. So I'm interested then, because so recently you as a person of colour, you became very known about your views about race, and there was quite a big media storm around it, which obviously must have been quite a roller coaster for you.
Yeah.
We've mentioned now, of course, that you find a lot of people expect you to talk a lot about being trans. Is there something inside you that you actually, like, a topic or an issue or an area in life that you're, like, desperate to actually talk about?
I'm such a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, really?
Yes. I just want to, like, sit there with a bottle of red wine sometimes with a journalist and just, like, I can tell that I really got on with them, and, like, we'll hint into something about, like, the ways of the world and have you heard this? I love hearing about conspiracy theories that I've never heard of, and just, like, things that just, like, blow your mind.
Yeah.
I was talking to Lily Allen the other day. Name drop, sorry.
I'll pick that up.
And just, like, having a good, like, conspiracy theory afternoon. So, yeah, I love that. I think it's great as well to also talk to, I mean, like, the whole talking to Piers Morgan kind of thing. I actually, as much as he can be really insufferable, I actually enjoy talking to people who don't necessarily have the same view as me.
Mm.
I enjoyed talking to him, but not when he was, like, just, you know, talking over me and all that kind of stuff. But I do find it healthy to have your views challenged and to talk to someone in a civil manner about why you think what you think, and be also, if someone has a greater platform than you, to offer that up to somebody.
Well, talking of platforms, I guess what's really interesting about what you've done as well is, yes, you go on massive TV shows, like, and you go on with the BBC, Channel 4, Huffington Post, like, national TV, but you've also got your own platforms and people will go and see what you're actually saying.
Yeah.
And so does that make you feel slightly more empowered, because obviously it matters what you say on TV, but also it kind of doesn't, because you can then say, well, actually I meant this, or this is what I think.
Yeah.
On your own.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to have that outlet. I don't know where I would be at without social media, to be honest, because it's very good for clarifying.
Mm.
And the media do get it wrong, and the media sensationalise and pick out what bits they want. Mm. I'm finding it quite difficult as well, I think, to process it all, because it has been, like, 6 weeks.
Yeah,
exactly. It feels like a lifetime,
but it feels like a lot of pressure too, because, like, for example, on this podcast we talk a lot about our opinions, and a lot of time we have a lot of time to, you know, maybe think about it beforehand, but sometimes we're just chatting and something will come out and, you know, you believe it and you think it, but ideas are fluid as well.
Yeah.
And opinions are fluid, and isn't it a lot of pressure, like, you've said something, and in no way am I saying that you don't absolutely stand by what you said, but it's like suddenly, like, every word that you've said has to be justified and analysed, and, like, what if, just like every other person, you've said your opinion and that opinion maybe will be something that is changing or evolving or getting stronger or moving over time, but I don't know, do you feel like you've had an awful lot of pressure put on you for, like, an opinion? And actually you changed my opinion a lot when I watched you on Channel 4 and the interview with Jon Snow, and there was so much stuff in there that opened my eyes, and I thought, I've never thought of it that way. I really haven't, and it was really interesting.
I mean, I do feel like sometimes a crippling a crippling pressure, especially because there's no trans women of colour in the media apart from me. I'm, like, the only one in the UK.
Mm.
So that's a lot of pressure from my community. But also it's, like, a great privilege as well to be a voice for girls like me. So I never had that when I grew up. So, I mean, like, I returned a dress to Topshop the other day, and I was walking towards the cashier, and this, like, girl was just looking at me just going, oh my God! So it's so lovely, and, like, kids coming up with their parents and saying, like, thank you. So, I mean, on that side, it's great, but, yeah, it is quite a pressure, especially when I'm talking about really... things that can rub people up the wrong way sometimes. But a lot of the time, it's not actually just purely my thoughts. I'm actually echoing academic theory. So, I mean, I'll add, like, my own experience into it, but largely I am just echoing feminists and racial theorists and just deeper thinkers into society. And that's all that I want, really, is people to think a little deeper. And I want to challenge myself as well to think deeper. I don't want to have the same mindset for... I'm not finished by any stretch of the imagination. My mind is set to, like, find out a load more things. I don't think that we should ever stop learning or discovering things. So I'm looking for other people to challenge me in the way that I hope to challenge other people.
And also, I mean, we kind of touched on this a little bit, but you must have to have some boundaries in place as well, because everyone kind of wants a piece, don't they? And which is great.
Yeah.
And everyone's just, like, loving what you're doing, but is it a case of having to sort of say no to stuff and just keep a little bit of a distance?
It's really difficult, because I kind of feel I'm kind of stuck between leap at the chance and leap at every chance, or... self-preservation, and it's finding that balance. I'm finding weekends quite difficult to deal with, because the weekdays are so busy. So when I, like, stop, it's kind of like you're forced to look in the mirror and just process everything. You're like, well, that was quite a weird week, wasn't it? And, like, last night I went out to an event, and it's like, picture here, go do this interview, go do that, and it's like, yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to process, but, you know, things change and all of that jazz. So I just need to adjust.
Yeah. Well, no, it's amazing. And also, like, the fact that, I guess, you're very approachable about these topics, which
see,
I think
now
is...
now I feel like we're letting you down, because you're like, I like people are combative, and we're both like... Oh, yeah. But we're both so excited to be here as well. I'm like, damn, we should be more...
No, not at all. I don't know. Like, I think people get... so worried when someone talks about racism, because we don't talk about it. So I guess when you're presenting someone with not that you don't have the option, we're going to talk about this, and but you're smiling at the same time, and you're just taking away that weight of it, because it's there. It's nothing, we can't do anything about it being there, but we can talk about it, and we can try and understand each other, and that doesn't need to be a morbid conversation in the dark and we're all crying and all that kind of jazz. We can actually just talk about it and take some of that weight away from it, and also remind white people that it doesn't affect them in the way that it affects black people. So as long as the willingness to learn and the willingness to understand and be empathetic, and also on our side, it also depends on our side how much emotional labour you can physically take. That depends on how well you know the person, whether or not it's a constructive situation that's actually going to have a resolve. It is very much in the person of colour's court, because it affects them. But there also needs to be an understanding between the two parties of the resolve includes both parties. So having someone just going and laying down the law and just being like, I suffer from racism, that's just going to instantly make someone turn off. And I understand exactly why, because I want to do that all the time. But really, a conversation is two people conversing, and if one party feels like they're not being heard, then it pushes them to do exactly what you're trying to not make them do.
Can I ask, because obviously, I mean, again, I might be making a presumption here, but I'm presuming that pretty much all people of colour have in some ways in their life experienced some form of racism. Did you find it quite hurtful? Because I did see some backlash. I mean, there's obviously was a hell of a lot of support, which has been fantastic. There was some backlash in people saying that took your comments very much out of context and saying, well, you're being racist against white people. Was that, like, I just imagine that must have been really quite hurtful.
I don't know if it was hurtful. I think it's frustrating. Okay. Just because there's a difference between racial prejudice and systemic racism that will actually stop you from progressing in your life.
Yeah.
So, I think that just shows an unwillingness to understand that different people have different experiences. I use the example of like a man, like saying, well, me saying to a man, well, you've never experienced sexism.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he comes back with, yes, I have, then I'll ask him to give an example. And then he'll give that example and I'll be like, that was an isolated event, but you aren't going to be stopping you. That's not going to stop you from progressing in your life. Because there is not a system in place. The patriarchy is there literally to make you thrive and progress. Also, when they start to say I'll be like, but it's not about you. It's not about you. It's not about your personal experience. It's about the experience of everyone. So as soon as you make it about yourself, you're losing the battle already, because it's never about what you have experienced in your life. It's about history, it's about ancestors, it's about hundreds and hundreds of years.
And I agree, it's really important to look at history, to look at the current like society that we live in, and to look at different groups, like whether it's male, woman, black, white, gay, straight, whatever it might be, but also to have an appreciation that within those groups we're all individuals
for sure.
There'll be such a wide variety, like to see those groups, but also to do what we were saying, not to box in and to also see the individual.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. But we also need to acknowledge that with us all being individuals, we still live underneath capitalism, and capitalism has demographics, and it all kind of points into a very definite structure. So.
You met with a lot of defensiveness, like I do this but I do that.
I understand mm-hmm. But I think once you tell somebody to take themselves out of it, and also like kind of just show them that the way that they feel is kind of irrelevant, and we are socially conditioned to believe certain things whether or not we know that that's happening. We are all brainwashed. None of us are above social conditioning. None of us. I think once you start to take away the power of racism, kind of like say that you aren't in control of this, even if you wanted to be, you're not. And once you take away that shame that they're acting in a way that they are conscious of, then I think that makes it a lot easier for people to compute, to say that even if you didn't want to be, you're still going to be a bit racist.
Yeah, and you're in the system.
Yeah.
So there was a really interesting study I did. I did experimental psychology at university, and it kind of backs up what you're saying. At the time, I was really young, and at the time it really shocked me. But now, actually, I don't find it that surprising at all. But it basically was looking at activation of racist thoughts, and they set up, it was all sorts of different experiments. So for example, they'd have two people playing chess or a game, and they wouldn't be able to see each other, and they'd be told that the person they were playing against is black or white, and then they'd be asked to, and they would be just a robot on the other side of them, so they wouldn't actually be a person, and they'd be asked afterwards, you know, what they thought of the game, how the person played, and they tended to use words when they thought they were playing against a black person, such as like, oh, played quite aggressively, and, you know, just kind of words that might stereotypically be assigned to like a black male, for example. And they didn't realise they were doing it, and so they basically concluded from it that even if you don't act upon your racism, that the like activation of the connections in your mind, because we've been so conditioned from everything, from films, from music, from books, from society, that even if you think, you know, I like to think I'm a really liberal, progressive person, I like to think I'm not racist, but I will, without even knowing it, potentially be judging people by their colour. And all you can do is stop yourself acting on it. But the only way you can stop the action is by being aware of it
and admitting to it.
Yeah,
you know, everybody, regardless of your race, holds racial bias. We all do. Systemic racism only affects people of colour, but we all hold a racial bias. Whether or not that's black people's racial bias to black people, whether it's black people's racial bias to white people, it's all within your mind. And I think exactly as you said, it's acknowledging it. And I just think admitting to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just admit it.
And like you said, learning from someone and listening and going, that's your experience, you've actually lived it. And, you know, whether it's, like you said, colour, or, you know, we judge people on their age, on their gender, on the way they look, on so many things. And it's a shortcut. We have to judge people because you don't have time to get to know everyone. Mm. But then stopping and processing that and going, I'm making a judgment, okay. And actually being aware can only come from listening to people who've experienced it and learning and working with it.
Ask, is there anything that you've seen where people are clearly trying, they've got good intentions, but they're getting it a bit wrong?
Yeah, I think it usually is with the fragility thing and speaking over people. And, you know, when a person of colour is talking about their lived experience and they say, well, I think this, or yeah, I can see what you mean, or maybe. And it's like, just take it for what it is. Just take it. Mm. It's the sense of being believed, and that, where's your proof all the time? It's like, oh, couldn't it just be this? Couldn't it just be that? Maybe you're just like overthinking it. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I understand that it must be difficult to take someone's word for something that you've never experienced in your entire life, and that you can't, if you grew up as a thinking that you're a very open-minded person and you're being presented with this information, I can imagine that it'd be quite difficult to process. But at the same time, you just need to take people's word for it on this one, because there's no, if you're white, there's no way that you're ever going to be experiencing what a black person goes through.
Have you had any black people reach out to you and say, my experience has been different, or...
Yeah, all the time.
And how do you...
Again, I just say the same thing. I'm just like, that's you.
Yeah.
That's you. I'm not speaking for myself all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm of a privilege where my skin is light. My dad, like, and my mum have mixed heritage, so my features aren't necessarily typically African. So I'm fully aware that if I was a darker skinned woman and I had said what I said and I was dragged through the media, I probably would have been made to look like an angrier black woman. I probably would have been demonized further. I probably would have found it more difficult to find work afterwards. So we all have, you know, I have a privilege anyway. So it's just acknowledging that privilege and making sure that it doesn't happen to anybody else. But yeah, I mean, there's issues of colorism as well within the black communities as well. So it's such a mess, and it just takes deconstructing it at one point at a time. And that's another problem that I find is, you know, people taking things off track. It's like, well, what about this? No, we're speaking about this. Like, well, what about the Jews? It's like, why are we on to Jews? Like, do you know what I mean? It's we need to focus on one topic at a time and dissect it, unpack it. I try to use the the point that we are literally of one race. Like, we are literally, human beings are the human race. We literally just look different because of geography and not really evolution, but just like kind of just, don't know, literally where we spread out over the world. So I use the idea that the lighter the skin you are, doesn't matter what race you are, the more privilege you will have. So I've got more privilege than a dark-skinned black woman, but say you've got more privilege than me. So if we just use the example that we're all the same, really, we just have an easier time the lighter skin we are.
I read something really interesting, actually, on this topic of, like, getting it a bit wrong. It was this article in the Hairpin, I think it was, by a black writer called Jasmine Hughes. And it was about, like, white people who were, like talking about themselves in a way of, like, oh, I'm so white, or I'm dancing like a white person, or, like, it was almost like they were mocking themselves to make themselves, like, so aware. It's almost like they were like, I'm not like other white people.
Yeah.
I'm so aware of... And she was just saying how that's not progressive or helping, really.
No.
Because you're then pretending you're better than everyone else.
Yeah.
Because you're so, like, woke, but you can't...
Yeah.
It's embarrassing to even use the word woke.
There's so many bad things on the internet. Like, another thing that really pisses me off is when white people use black memes. That just annoys me. It just makes me feel a bit like it's kind of like blackface a little bit.
Do you feel the same about... So we were having this conversation, weren't we, the other day? Sorry, I'm looking at our producer's shoulders. But the three of us had this chat. Do you feel that about emojis? Because someone was talking about emojis.
Yeah, it's like, why are you using a black hand?
So can I just say... So I, again, like, I'm so, like, open to learning.
You use a lot of different colours.
So I use different colours. And the reason I do isn't because I'm trying to, like, be like, oh, look, I'm being cute, I'm using black. But I'm actually like, why is the white the normal? I just felt like, actually, like... It should be mixed, like it should be all different. So I changed all my emojis to be all different colors because I was like, I just think it's really wrong that when I'm texting people,
it's like
the normal hand is a white hand. Like, no. So, like, sometimes my hand, like, if you look at my phone now, like, half my hands are white, half are black, half are like the Indian ones. And I'm like, I was trying to, in my way, do my small bit to normalize emojis, but actually, maybe I was doing something offensive without
realizing. No, but it's cute with you, like, talking it through, but like, yeah, I mean, I was just under the impression that you just choose whatever colour you are.
Yeah.
But I think that, but I don't know if it's like, I'm going to change it, but maybe I need to revert back to the olive skin one.
Thank you so much.
I feel like we started one place, we ended the other, and we went on so many different journeys on the way. I always feel bad to bring up my topic now because that was so interesting. But
very good.
I do have something to get off my breasts today. And this is about a friend of mine. Well, it started about a friend of mine who she's just had given birth, actually, but she was heavily pregnant, obviously, for a while. And she was taking the tube and the bus every day. And she said to me one day, she was like, yeah, no, like, I'm always standing on the tube, it's exhausting, you know, especially 8.5 months pregnant. And I was like, why don't people stand for you? She said, oh no, no one stands for me. And, you know, very obviously big belly, probably looking exhausted. And I just found that really surprising. And even she said, when people are sitting in the seats that are assigned for pregnant, old people, people with kids, disabled people, they still don't stand up. And she said, oh, well, you know, very occasionally a woman will stand up. But she said the guys tend to look down at their phone or just kind of suddenly look very involved in whatever's going on. And so I got really annoyed about that just in itself. I went on Twitter and asked whether other women had had that experience, and they said they had. They said that that men in suits tend to never get up for them, that they found it was actually young men, like often teenage boys and women, that would get up for them, which I was like, disappointed in myself that I was surprised that it was the young teenage boys, because I obviously didn't give them enough credit, because you tend to think of the young generations as being like less chivalrous. But I just was thinking about that, a bit annoyed about that, but also just thinking, like, is this an indication as well that chivalry is dead? And is that even a bad thing if chivalry is dead? Because is that like a byproduct of feminism and us all being equal? But like, what is it okay that I'm more annoyed that a guy didn't stand up for her than a woman didn't stand up for her? So that was what I wanted to get off my breast and get your guys' thoughts on too.
Do you want to go first?
Well, I was going to say that, and I'm not by any means sticking up for them, because obviously that's really shit. Like, you should look around and you should know if someone has a disability or difficulty getting on or is pregnant, like any sort of thing that needs sort of an extra seat. But at the same time, I wonder if the women are standing up more because they are maybe more aware of the thought of being pregnant. Like, I know that's really not a good example, but maybe men aren't even thinking.
I don't think men tend to think.
Because it's not their experience. No. But that's not
an
excuse.
I don't know. I think when it comes to public transport, it's quite indicative of just how men are generally. Like, with things like manspreading and using both armrests so that I'm just there like this with my arms inside and keeping my legs together. And I don't know. I kind of feel like this... there's not this sense of awareness, self-awareness, that we see going through all aspects of the male existence.
Because I feel though, like, if I think about all the guys I know, and maybe I'm just in a like huge, I mean, I know I'm in a bubble anyway, but maybe I'm in like the bubble within the bubble, where I feel like the guys I know are like really thoughtful. And again, it's not about like, I'm a guy, I have to stand up for a woman. Mm. Like, you know, perhaps they would have 30, 40 years ago. It's more like there's someone who's you are fit, you're a young male, you're fit, you're healthy, if, you know, if that's the case, if they're not something, an issue. But, you know, and here's a woman who's clearly not as fit in terms of physically able as you. And I just feel like I don't know any guys that would do that. But who are all these men on the tube who are just not standing up? Like,
was she wearing a badge?
No, she wasn't wearing a badge, but she, I mean, she had a big old belly. And I said to her, why don't you say to them, excuse me, this is a reserved seat, or a,
so
excuse
priority
me,
seat.
That's the one. Yeah. So excuse me, this is a priority seat. And she was like, oh, I'm too embarrassed. And, you know, and I was like, no, you should shame people. Like, if they're not getting up for you, say it. But
the bigger symbol, the bigger symbolism of that is that she's not taking up the space that she should. Like, I feel like, yeah. Isn't that something that you could say about lots of things, like even a meeting or a meeting, like that
but
men,
yeah,
take up more space and we need to break that,
yeah,
down.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I never feel like I can ask a man to, like, well, actually, no, I have a couple of times, it's depending on how tired or how hungry I am. I have asked a few guys to, like, move their legs, like, closer together so that I can...
Good for you.
Yeah.
I need to do that more.
But it's all about safety and feeling feeling like you're going to be believed or feeling like you're going to be shut down. And who are these people? Like, are they people that could pose a threat to you? I mean, London is a bit of a crazy place sometimes. So I guess it's all down to individual circumstances.
Yeah, and I was going to say that, actually. London...
And past experiences also.
Mm. Yeah, because maybe that wouldn't happen in, like, a local village. Maybe you would help the old lady onto the bus, yeah, more. London, I feel, you got your headphones in, you got your face down.
Everyone's so insular.
But it's not, sad, it's not it? Just standing... I mean, generally speaking, so I'm really conflicted about the whole idea of chivalry. I don't know about you guys, because on the one hand, I think just generally being polite, and I think, again, in that kind of situation, like I was saying, men tend to be, like, you know, fit, young, healthy, if they are, and, you know, that therefore they should give up their seat for someone who needs it more. But at the same time, the whole idea of, like, men having to open the car door, and I find that a little bit sexist almost, or too much, like, when I'm not helpless, I don't need you to pay for my meal, I don't need you to open my door. So I feel like I'm conflicted, so maybe I'm being unfair to guys because I'm so conflicted about it myself.
I don't know.
They're confused too, like, are we meant to? Are we going to offend women if we...
I don't think that chivalry comes into, like, offering up a seat for a pregnant woman so much. I think it does I don't really think it does. When I think of chivalry, I think of, like, romance. Yeah. And, like, it's nice to sometimes... I know it's because we've been, like, ingrained with the Disney idea of, like, love and romance. But, like, I don't know. Like, sometimes it's nice to see that a guy cares by, like, opening doors. I don't think that is necessarily something that we should measure a guy's character by or a woman's expectations by. But I don't know. I don't know if being chivalrous is... I think it's also putting... it's like giving cookies too much to men as well. It's like, oh, he's chivalrous if he gives up a seat for a pregnant woman.
Yeah.
Everyone should give up their seat for a pregnant woman. It should go without saying.
But I got more pissed off about the guys not doing it than the girls. And then I had to question why that was. Because if I'm a feminist and everyone's equal and all the rest of it, and I am a feminist, then why was I more pissed off at the men for not standing up for her? Which was my natural gut reaction.
I've had
I was like, who are these guys? I'm going
to
get on
tube chat with myself about the fact that, like, I still, like, if there's a spider in the house, I scream and go and get my boyfriend. That's not exactly like waving the flag for. But then I was thinking, like, what about if you're in a same-sex relationship? Wouldn't you just want your partner to be chivalrous anyway? Like, I like to think that with a woman, I'd be like, I would want you to treat me nicely.
And can I just say, Emma, just in that spider thing, my boyfriend is terrified of spiders, and when there's a spider in the shower, he screams and I have to come and get rid of it.
Then
so
that's
there you
chivalrous
go.
Of you.
I'm being chivalrous.
Why is there a word for men being nice? Like, why is there a word for men being nice?
Brownie point.
Because, like, you said, they had to be rewarded.
Yeah.
And go, like, well done, you.
Like, you're not being chivalrous, you're being a deep, decent human being.
Yeah.
But, like, but I do think, like, for guys, so say, for example, you're, like, a 50-year-old man and you've slightly bridged, like, different times, obviously, whereby at one point it was very much expected for you to be, like, all the classic, what we would call chivalrous things, and, you know, treat a lady like a lady. And nowadays, it might be a bit confusing for one of these guys, because they're like, if I do that, if I open the door, am I going to be accused of being, like, a sexist pig? And I do also think, like, I do also understand why that maybe some guys would maybe confuse them a little bit as well.
I mean, it's like if someone's, like, holding a pushchair and going down an escalator and they look like they're going
to
fall over, and a guy is like, oh, I won't help, it's not very feminist of me, she's fine on her own, strong woman. It's like, no, she's a human being. It's bizarre.
I don't know, I think also that maybe the fact that you're angry because it's a man is because a cis man will never experience pregnancy. There's lots of women also that will never experience pregnancy. But it's almost like, I don't know, I kind of feel like a cis man would never have that sacrifice of his body. Mm. And to disregard the fact that a woman is in her body is in I was going to say a state is in a state of change and vulnerability as well, and to disregard that and to be of a sex where you will never experience that, I think that that's a frustrating thing.
Do you think though, like generally, like even male and women aside, do you think like as time has gone by, like where we are today, we're just less thoughtful about other people and less helpful? And you know, like you were saying, Emma, the example of like someone struggling with a pushchair, man or woman struggling with a pushchair, like we are less prone to just kind of think like I want to help each other out, whereas before we were in more living in communities, and you know, like you're saying, maybe it might be a different thing if it was outside of a big city.
Yeah,
do you think that's just where we're headed, that we're all just a bit more in our own zones and thinking about ourselves? And
yeah, I mean this 2017 and 2016 was a mess as well, but like 2017 is even worse, so I don't know. I think that we do live in a society where it is every man for himself, every woman for herself as well, everyone for themselves.
How can we combat that though? Because it seems really sad.
I think we are. I think that we are, as like in doing what we're doing, and like people that do podcasts and people that work within the media to try and bring about change. I feel like we are doing our bit. But a lot of people will just consume and not put anything out. And they're the people that are probably the most into it. It's like the well-meaning liberal people that consume liberal media but don't actually do anything to help.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot of that. And, you know, it's someone else's problem. Someone else will help them. Someone else will give up their seat. I can't believe that no one gave up their seats whilst having a seat. It's that kind of thing, I think.
On the most like serious end of that, I remember there was a really famous case, and I'm really sorry, I can't remember the name of the woman, but she was murdered in a street in America, and for something like 3 hours neighbours heard her screaming and no one called the police, and everyone thought, she's screaming so much, someone else will do it. Oh, and it was that thing of like, someone else should do it.
I've done that before. It's like when you're like half asleep in bed, and like I live in, sorry, my eyes are stuck together for my eyelash glue.
They look good, so.
I was like, let me just put it. So yeah, I live in Stockwell, like verging on Brixton, and there's a lot of mental health services in Brixton. And I was half asleep, and it was something like 3:30 in the morning, and I hadn't been out the previous night. So I was woken up like to screams, like really, really loud screams. And like in my head, I somehow justified it, that I didn't need to go to the window, I didn't need to check it out, because it was probably just somebody that isn't very well and just letting off steam or just doing their thing. And I thought, you know, well, if she's ill, if someone else will get it, someone else will get it. And I guess because I wasn't fully conscious, that bad side of me took over. So I guess that brings us back to the original point of how we're socially constructed. You know, it's always someone else's problem rather than us.
Because
I should have got up really.
Yeah. But you think someone else will deal with it? And I actually, since I read about that, and again, it's back to that whole point of just constantly being aware, and the fact that that happened to you, but now you're thinking about that, it means you probably wouldn't do that again. And after I read about that study and that poor woman, you know, God knows if she could have been saved if someone had bothered to call the police. But I try, like, now since then, to go, like, if I see, you know, you see sometimes guys on the street and they're like kind of slightly like looking like they're a bit unconscious and they're probably drunk, but you don't know, they could be having a heart attack or epileptic or something, and I try and actually go, okay, stop, and actually just check. And then every time I've done it, they've been drunk, right? I've never had. But you just kind of go, okay, just check on people and just try and just be aware. Like, that story was the worst possible scenario of someone actually dying. But in every instance, like, someone else won't necessarily do it. And you see people walk past people on the street all the time who are, like, potentially sick, you know?
So to finish off, my thing that I want to get off my breast is, actually inspired by this like Instagram meme that keeps being shared, and normally I'm not so like impressionable when it comes to Instagram memes. I mean, I just scroll past them, but this one was a picture of the quote "boys will be boys," and then the boys like crossed out, and it says "boys will be fucking accountable for their actions," and obviously it's being shared off the back of the Harvey Weinstein thing. And I was thinking back to my memories of university and how I was really miserable at uni. Like I had the worst 3 years ever. Mm-hmm. Like I hated it, and it was mostly down to lad culture and how the boys that I knew were just loved like the practical joke thing, and like they would act really out of order, and I was actually really shocked by it because I'd never met boys like that before in my life. And I was just thinking of the Harvey Weinstein thing and how for so long he just got away with it. And it was just so normal because boys will be boys. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of ask you guys what you thought about how you think that might end one day, hopefully. Is it just so ingrained in culture?
I know exactly how you feel, though, because some of the things that I put up with, even recently in a job that I was in, I used to work in a live music venue, and one of the chefs was really, really over the top with kind of, like, the flirting. I don't mind a bit of flirting, but this was, like, kind of, "I dreamt about you last night," and, like, saying like, "Oh, you look nice today," and it's like, "Come over here and give me a hug," and then I like feeling like I was obliged to give him a hug, and then like if I gave him a hug, like saying, "Oh," because he could feel like my boobs on his chest, and like it's like things like that. And you know, I mean, that it did at one point get like quite bad, and I did call him out, but also it's that sense of just feeling embarrassed. And like, you're the killjoy, you're the one to ruin everyone else's party. You know, why can't you take a joke? Was it that serious, really? He didn't touch you down there, so it can't be that serious. But
take it as a compliment.
Yeah, like, I was like, oh, he's just being him. Like,
it's like the cool girl thing of like, you know, mucking in with the lads and stuff. Because what's really interesting is when you Google search Harvey Weinstein and like all of the girl and all of the women that have come forward, like they are joking with him in the photos, and they are like in some photos sitting on his lap and stuff like that. Some of the articles are so wrong when they're sort of like in blaming them in some way, which I'm totally obviously against that. But what's interesting about that is they have admitted they went along with it for a while.
Well, yeah, people want to keep their jobs, you know. If you're part of a film studio and you've got someone who is literally responsible for the progression of your career and abusing that position, of course you're going to go along with it to a certain extent, because there's a chance that you won't be believed, which is what we're seeing. It's really, really shocking. It's the same as when Amber Heard said what Johnny Depp was doing to her. It's Amber Heard, right, isn't it?
Yeah,
Amber Heard. And everyone saying, "Oh, she's a manipulative bitch," and you know, it's like killing Pirates of the Caribbean. It's like, we can't watch Pirates of the Caribbean anymore because she called out abuse, and it's like, it's so selfish. So this is the reason why women don't call it out, because it just won't be believed or being seen as ruining everyone else's fun.
Do you think this is a mark of, you know, sorry guys, party's over, you can't be a creep anymore? There is a sense of like, is this a turning point? But or am I just being optimistic?
I don't know. I think that maybe.
But in a way, there's a difference between, so I'm just in my head thinking about boys will be boys and that expression. So in a way, what you were talking about, what happened to you, was there other people around?
The other male chefs in the kitchen.
So it's kind of that boys will be boys is almost like doing something really inappropriate and quite violating, to, particularly towards a woman, with other guys around. So it's kind of almost like, hey, I'm not doing anything wrong. There's people here.
You need to see this face. She's like, that was like ultimate bro face.
She's like, lads.
Where is
that's a flashback to
my past.
I'm
where
triggered.
Where is what... sorry,
sorry,
guys.
Ultimate trigger.
Whereas what Harvey Weinstein has admitted to doing and is alleged at doing, them, even the more serious things, what's so sinister about that is that it was just him and the woman alone. So there's no kind of evil. Although, I mean, is that better? Is it better to do it in that kind of disguise of, I'm doing it in front of other people, so it's one of the lads, but it's like, that's almost more, is that more humiliating? I don't know, I'm not too sure, but it's like, the boys will be boys thing is like that kind of creepy laddie.
But also, boys will be boys comes from, like, you know, young boys. So in the playground, oh, boys will be boys, or, oh, covered in mud, boys will be boys. So yeah. I think maybe men grow up thinking, well, I got away with murder when I was younger. Like, there was
It's male privilege, isn't it?
Yeah, and in the Huffington Post, back in, like, 2014 or something, there was a piece about a group of boys who tied this other boy to a goalpost with sellotape. But the boy had autism and was, like, screaming and, like, being really, like, he was really traumatised. But a lot of the parents were just like, oh, boys will be boys, yeah. Sellotaping them to goalposts. And I just think, I would hate to be in a group of boys where you're getting bullied and it's just under the guise of boys will be boys. That's not very nice for anyone.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's on one hand just, like, doing it in front of, like, their guy friends because that allows them to get away with it, with, like, things like bro code and things like that. It's almost like I'm doing it in front of my boys because I know that my boys won't stitch me up. I know that everyone else is just gonna exercise bro code and we're gonna get away with it because boys will be boys.
But wouldn't it be nice if, like, the guys listening to this and the guys generally seeing that meme reclaim that phrase? Like, boys will be boys, to, like, turn it so that in years to come that becomes a really positive thing. Like, when you go boys will be boys, it's about them doing fucking amazing things and, like, standing up for women, or, like,
on the tube.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, we're literally standing. Yeah. No, but just, you know, turn it into a positive. Like, wouldn't it be great if that expression became something positive rather than what we see it now, which is actually, like, basically like
rape culture.
Well, yeah. just excusing whether it's you know, bad behavior of kids, like you said, tying up an autistic kid, or guys being lechy, you know, to kind of reclaim that. It's just, come on, guys listening.
Then you smash the patriarchy. Involved, yeah. Smash the patriarchy and then be boys. Mm. And be boys. And be great boys.
Be great boys, exactly.
Be great boys.
Be lovely boys.
That's a good note to end on. Thank you so much. That was amazing.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Thanks. We know how busy you are, so we're honoured to have you on the sofa with us.
Thank you. You're waking me up. I came here and I've had a very, very busy morning, so...
So hope you enjoyed that episode with Monroe Bergdorf as much as we did. I'm sure you've got plenty you want to talk to us about. I'm sure it would have stirred up many thoughts, many conversations that you're having in your own homes. We keep getting messages, don't we, people saying,
yeah,
there's things you want to shout and join in the conversation on. You can by leaving it in the iTunes rate and review section.
Yes, please do. We're getting emails and Instagram DMs and all sorts of comments left. But the best place really is to leave it on the iTunes page. So please leave us a review, and thank you so much for listening to the season so far.
We have one more episode. I can't believe how fast this series has gone.
It's the last one.
Yep. We promised 8 episodes for series 1, and we've saved a really amazing one for the last episode this season. We'll be joined next week by the brilliant
Angela Scanlon.